for the first hour while you're falling in love. And I know I can make it fairly interesting while you're falling out of love. But I know I'm in trouble for the section that they're in love. That's going to last not very long, or you're reduced to them running through the cornfield in slow motion and falling on the ground and tumbling over each other and sipping wine from each other's lips or something. It all looks like American Express commercial.
Of San Francisco? What about those televised reports, the bombings, the slaughter?
Models.
Models?
We have a full-time division of A-class robots who do nothing but photograph the progress of the fictitious war using scale models. The entire destruction of San Francisco, which you witnessed on your televisors, took place on a tabletop.
Solomon's account of
that there is conflict, and conflict that is non-resolvable, results in confusion and pain. Confusion and pain. That the normal methods of solving things that people have had during their lives fail. And that they don't know what to do, and they go into deep confusion.
Survival is to join with them. We'll need food and shelter. If we destroy them...
The professor is right, Colonel. We're cut off from our own peoples.
Things they did in these meatpacking plants was to almost bring a fast food mentality to how they treat their workers there. Meatpacking used to be one of the highest paid industrial jobs in the United States and remained so until the 1970s. Now it's one of the lowest paying in
Well, certainly so, certainly, yes. It is absolutely a pleasure to be here in San Francisco. A pleasure, even more, to be here with you.
An image of himself, which was respectful, unreal, I would be very happy.
Yet the stories from Sarajevo were filmed by professional camera people. The BBC went even further. They transformed the subject of the film into the storyteller.
Everything that we do a piece to camera. It's called Doing the Coconut.
Sorry?
Hello? Yes.
50 of them throughout Britain producing short vignettes,
yeah,
which has been broadcast separately,
somewhere?
A part of a long program. They call it Video Nation.
Yes.
Broadcast separately,
somewhere?
A part of a long program. They call it Video Nation. They call it Video Nation.
Yes. And I should be on again this Sunday, 7:40 BBC Two. All right?
Yeah.
Listen, Barbara, it's sweet of you to ring, but at the moment, I'm being filmed by an American company. Filmed by an American company. I'm not joking. So I can't talk, but it's nice of you to ring. So if you, but I see you Sunday. All right? Okay, thanks. How's your little boy? Of course I got my makeup on. How's your little boy? Yes, okay then, right. Bye-bye. Okay, bye.
But for me, ever since I've started this project, I have just been surrounded.
I can't help it. I'm a romantic fool.
Case of really empowering cultural resistance that I had never known had existed. For me, this has been a tremendously rejuvenating process, and it did come at a time when I was starting to feel probably some similar depression to what you were talking about. And I see it not just within the realm of music, but within a lot of different alternative cultures, that people, even though maybe more standardized leftist organizations are by and large seeming to disappear or transform, is that new things are popping up, and a lot of what's popping up is really, really culturally exciting.
Yeah, I think so too. Greg, what are some of the other things that are available on KCBL?
On KCBL, you've got some of the only rap programming that can be heard really outside of the Bay Area in Northern Sacramento or Northern California. That was one of the roles that also the community-powered radio pirates radio station played, is that there is an incredible emptiness on the airwaves in terms of playing independent rap music. And Community Power Radio took that up for a while. KCBL, through the years, has been an outlet for a number of really, really high-quality DJs.
I love you. Like morning.
Today, food conservation is imperative. Now, fruit and leftovers of sundry varieties can keep close company with individuality maintained by the odorless, non-tainting suction rims, which can be used for years.
I would imagine that there's probably things you're already thinking of for the release of Photoshop 7. What kind of things would those be?
Well, it's almost on a free path because it has a set of paths built in which you can write your type out on. But I'm looking forward to a freeform path that I can draw and then stretch the type up and down the line and, you know, just generally play with it.
Something for Adobe to look at. Now, what about the future for you? One of the pre-interview answers that you gave me about your look forward to the future was one of the more interesting ones I've ever heard and indicative of what a pro would think about the advance of technology.
Friday of last week, the French government legislated this. I was there earlier this spring at the invitation of Philippe Séguin, the president of the National Assembly, and we talked to the labor and business leaders of the country, and this last Friday, here's what they did. The French government said to employers, if you voluntarily reduce your work week by 15%, and then you net hire, because you reduce the work week, you can net hire. If you do that, the government will pay 50% of your payroll taxes in year one and 40% after year one.
I feel your problems.
Working at your Tamar Telegraph 3 to accurately, and they figure that within a couple thousand of a degree of the theoretical outcome.
just stop fiddling with them. I think this ship has a far better idea of where it's going than we do.
Good looking versus the ugly, the poor versus the wealthy, youth versus authority, women versus men, us versus them, Russia versus the USA, Republican versus Democrat, Catholic versus Protestant, Chinese food versus Italian food.
Force of commitment that once activated can change the meaning of the past, can change the meaning of the past, and can change the course of the future. Within this very mystery and magic, not all of you will find every gem, every jewel, but so many of you will find some.
Worin die Provokationen der Kinder oder der Frauen bestehen sollen, die man misshandelt, die man verschleppt, oder worin die Provokation derer bestanden haben soll, die man in der tierischesten, sadistischesten Weise teils misshandelt, teils getötet hat.
In this new nuclear family, there's a kind of incestuous crucible going on there, okay? So what I'm saying is that the child care problems that we are very concerned with right now are afflicting primarily white middle-class women.
Because the more we have these transient professional families that move around the country a lot and put down roots in these, like, in these horrible sterile developments where you have this fancy house in the middle of a grass plot, like a cemetery plot, okay, and so on, it is paradoxically the poor working class that's closer to their neighbors, people who don't move for jobs, who know their neighbors for 40 years, and whose relatives live nearby, the aunts, the cousins, the grandparents, their child care problems are not as severe. My mother went back to work. We were very poor. We were Italian immigrants and so on. My mother went back to work for a couple of years. I was raised by my grandmothers, okay, and so on. And so today, we have the crisis. The more a woman rises professionally, the more she becomes the high, you know, powered attorney or doctor or whatever, the more she needs child care, okay, and the more we're developing in this culture into a peculiar kind of master race dichotomy where you get like the Kimba Wood. I hate that, the Kimba Wood, Zoe Baird type of these awful, awful, like 40-year-old girls, okay, in style, okay, and so on. They delay their pregnancies till the optimal career moment, and now they need a nanny. And so what I see in the streets of Philadelphia, okay, are black women pushing strollers with rich white babies, okay? And we've got to address this problem, okay? One of the biggest crises facing contemporary feminism is child care and what it does to children to have the children raised by strangers.
Look forward to the future was one of the more interesting ones I've ever heard. One of the pre-interview answers that you gave me about your look forward to the future was what?
Assumption, and it's very threatening to artists, as you've rightly pointed out, that make
I guarantee that if I am elected, I will take over the White House, hang out, shoot fools, scratch my ass, and not do a damn thing.
Are floating, pleasant, tingling, clearness, as if stepping out from a lake after skinny dipping with friends, colors vivid, feeling balanced, a heavenly human expression, a once noble foundation lost. Pocahontas takes out some reefer, all of us sitting Indian style, our pledge of allegiance. Forever today, friends. Forever today, friends.
Are looking for different things. That's why they have the opportunity to to view the videotapes we make of the various families, and of course the families get to see the videotapes of our applicants. As I mentioned to you before...
Looking in their sex relationships then for emotional signs from other people and a sign in themselves that they can really emote and feel with somebody, you see? Everybody is trying to cure an emotional problem. They're trying to change something about themselves emotionally.
I was in San Francisco, and it was a lovely sunny day. I was wearing a jacket that my daughter had given me from Mad Magazine. It had Alfred Newman on the back saying, "What Me Worry?" And I was in Washington Square Park waiting for the St. Stupid Day Parade to come, which was sponsored by the Church of the Last Laugh, typical San Francisco activity. There were people dressed in clown suits there, and there was a bunch of musical instruments that had the yellow police tape around them that said, "Police line, do not cross." And a guy in a clown costume came up to me and gave me a few feet of it, which I rolled up in my pocket. But it was that kind of afternoon. So I was in San Francisco because I was going to MC a benefit for Jan Kerouac, the daughter of Jack Kerouac. Even though she only met him once, you know, to be a sperm donor is not enough anymore. And that's where Beat came from, the Beat Generation, from Deadbeat Dad. Nobody ever knew that before. But Jan was very ill. She has since died, but we were holding a benefit for her that night at a theater in Fort Mason in San Francisco near the wharf. And backstage, somebody had given me a little baggie of something. You know, people do that as a gesture, and I said, "Thanks very much." He said, "You really enjoy it," and I put it in my pocket.
Those gems and jewels of commitment. Further, you have embarked upon a new way of growing, upon a new way of changing, a new way in which many of the old words will be used, but with totally new and different, deeper, richer, ripe, dripping with magic.
Okay, it is not the future is the children, and I think I'm a teacher for 23 years, and the kids I'm getting in the classroom, okay, they're melancholy, they're lost, they have nothing. I at least was raised by a very structured, extended Italian family. It gave me the strength of personality I have now.
Bring back the old-fashioned Italian families.
Interesting ones I've ever heard, and indicative of what a pro would think about the advance of technology. Where
cry, and you cry. Now, you cry lightly at first. And most of our cries, you go ahead and cry lightly, both of you. Most of these cries are not heard by us when we're so much entrenched in this kind of an interaction. What we think, it's somebody else's cry. Or what we think is that this is weak, that what we're doing, to get in touch with ourselves and what we want for ourselves. So what we do is we try to shut that up by not noticing, by ignoring.
And forgot about it. Now, out in the parking lot, I'm in the car with my friend Julius, who is an inveterate pot smoker. I mean, he was once going to drive a woman to the hospital when she was going to have a baby. And she started to have her contractions. And he says, wait a minute. And he's still rolling a joint for the trip. So we're in the parking lot, and he's rolling a joint in the cardboard box on the dashboard with the map light on. And then we see a cop's car way in the distance, and they're over there, so we feel okay. Not realizing this, circling around the whole parking lot, coming behind us with their lights off. And I'm on the passenger side, and suddenly there's a knock on the window, and a big flashlight.
So we were right where we were putting black cloth around ourselves so we wouldn't hear that. Now that voice is right behind our navel. That's the place where the anxiety seeps out, where the feeling of wanting to be with somebody comes out. Now anybody in this audience at this moment, or anybody in the presence of these people, will hear those voices. Our children hear our voices like that, and they can't do anything about it.
But the designers of Madison Avenue, the Pentagon, so forth and so on.
Like the book itself, one of the things I get with the book is that Wirikuta is dreaming me. What's talked about in the book is dreaming me, it's dreaming through me. And so to live a life where you stay in right relationship, what I call right relationship, good relationship, with the Great Spirit, the power, with Grandpa Fire, with Mother Earth, with the sun, with the moon, with the trees, with the wind, with your power animals, with your family, your children, the people you work with, to do the best you can to stay in good relationship with the people who push your buttons and piss you off and all of those kinds of things that you have to live your life in a certain way. It's not about techniques. If you live your life in violation or opposition to these principles of right relationship, when it comes time to do a technique, maybe you'll be able to pull it off, but it's not going to be good or strong.
Klinsky, contracts like the Calabro murder were strictly business. They gave him the money he needed for his family. The Iceman was leading a double life.
WZBC, Anna Newton, 90.3 FM. It's here. I can prove it. I have little boxes, and they all have telepathy with one another, so they give me a seemingly coherent virtual experience, since that's the only kind we have around here. And I go for it. I'm supposed to go for it. What's the right answer?
Lived on a quiet street in Bergen County, New Jersey, surrounded by neighbors who had no idea they were living next door to a mafia hitman.
New Metaphysics, Gary Geiserman. The usual live worldwide broadcast. And why not? I've done spiritual work. Becoming the only game in town. As I probably get ahead of myself here. So what do you do with a worldwide audience?
He was determined that no one, not even his own family, would ever find out who he really was.
Anna Newton in Massachusetts. Tiny little squashed up state up in the tiny little squashed up section of the landmass. And don't forget, we've had the German male chauvinist worldview map. Because I don't know what the kids today have in the little schools. Probably the same Mercator thing. So as it was described in the West Wing about 2.5 months ago, this worldview is very misleading. Not a good picture of the face of our reality today. Not good at all. Other than continuing sleep, of course. I realized I was laying in some sort of Wayfarers Inn with thousands of other people sleeping next to me. Theoretically, not emotionally, that is. I never actually had that dream, but in some ways, it's meaningful for me to acknowledge that this could have been a dream. Not for any logical reason, but I think I'll have that dream right now.
I never questioned him, and you just knew, don't do it, don't ask.
And suggest to a young gentleman or a middle-aged gentleman that he experience a wide range of kinds of families. Now, we have people who use our service on an ongoing basis, and of course, they're in a position, depending on the mood they're in, depending on what's going on in their lives, to take advantage of a particular kind of family that they know we have in our inventory.
And you know how your heart suddenly goes thump? You know it's reality. You don't have to pinch yourself. You know that your whole life has inevitably led to this point.
As we say, also useful in connecting with your future self. In fact, a lot of people have trouble with skulls. They have trouble with them because they're shaped like dead people's skulls. Well, they're shaped like a cranium, certainly so. And even when they're not, people can have fear of them. Sometimes it's because they have not resolved their issues around death. They're carrying too much baggage about dying and that death is a failure, that death is something wrong, death is something that should never be done by anybody. We're not going to get into that discussion now, but to understand that fears of death will be reflected in fears of skulls in skull shapes.
Really happening. I mean, it's only a matter of how tight you draw the metaphor.
Said something. I don't think it's good to roll a joint with the map light on. You know, you kind of just let yourself be cowed. Now, Julius and I are told to get out of the car and get to the side of the car, and he had only the pot, so he gets a $50 citation. And now the guy is searching me, and I'm trying to think, can I throw this little baggie away? But I couldn't. It was just too late. I mean, I was stuck with it. And
going to be good or strong is that if you're living your life in truth. So when you've got a spirit and you say, Great Spirit, use me as a channel, as an open channel for whatever you want to bring through to this person or this family or this organization or this situation, then it'll happen.
Quite sensible to me.
What do you know about it, Ape-Man?
Well, look, if whoever owns this ship traveled forward in time to the restaurant at the end of the universe, then presumably he must have programmed the ship in advance to return him to the exact point he originally left.
Another word and I'll have you court-martialed. Now, ready your weapons.
Men, don't do it! Our only hope now is peace.
Silence!
I've got to warn them. Go back! Go back!
If he got up at 2 o'clock in the morning or during dinner and put on his shoes and walked out the door, you said, bye. You didn't say, where are you going or why are you going?
But you know, it's more than that, it's different than that, because there's also the same fear of such a crystal as this, that is a skull consciousness, though it has not a shape. And that's because skulls are windows to the future. Not in the predictive sense of, it's going to rain tomorrow, it's going to snow next winter, whatever. But skulls are a connection to the future, i.e. to the future self. It is with skulls that you can go into them to weed, as we've talked about in various audio tapes, to weed out certain futures that are in pipeline, dissonant futures, futures that maybe in the midst of flurry and anger I laid a future, but now I don't want to, I wish I could retract it. Working with the skull energy, you can go into the future and find certain futures that you have woven. At times of despair, at times of great martyrhood, at times of great anger, when you were going to show them all by having a miserable future, and then they would... I'm not in that place anymore, but I laid a couple of futures in that place that I want to now unravel. I want to, and I can use a skull to carry me to such futures in this particular regard.
And there he is searching me, looking at my back, which has Alfred E. Newman staring back at him, saying, what me worry? And he's saying, you don't have anything sharp in your pockets, do you? I guess he figures needles. I say, no, there's keys in that pocket and a pen in that pocket. And he says, because if I get stuck, I'm going to be very mad. And then he pulls out of one of my pockets and he unrolls it, this yellow police tape. And he says, where'd you get that? I said, I got it at the St. Stupid Day Parade. He said, what's it for? I said, to hold people back. And then suddenly he comes upon a little baggie, throws it on the hood of the car, And there it is. And I'm saying to myself,
realize, you know, I've been coming and going from Los Angeles recently a lot, and when the plane swings out over the eastern part of the city, looking down, it's like looking at a printed circuit. These curved driveways and cul-de-sacs with the same little modules installed on each end of them. And you realize, you know, that as long as the Reader's Digest stays subscribed to and the TV stays on, these are all interchangeable parts.
And certain package programs where an individual can experience over the course of a 12-month period a sort of a sampler. And an individual has the opportunity to experience a pretty considerable range of families.
Makes sense.
That's quite a good thought, you know. Particularly if he was anticipating having a good time. Drunk in charge of a timeship is a pretty serious offense. They tend to lock you away in some planet stone age and tell you to evolve into a more responsible life form.
So this.
Psilocybin. And the cop says, so you like mushrooms, huh?
You're in some way doing some damage, and that is normally, most people push their voice. So, you know, a lot of actors think that if you just shout, you'll be heard. Well, it's very interesting. You can often hear a voice, but if you're shouting, people will not listen to it.
Meaning changes. You are in the midst, some of you feel as though you're in the throes of founding a new spirituality.
Nice families too.
Yeah.
Our phone number is 1-800-423.
Talk, Adam is on the line from Carol.
Hello, Adam.
Yes, hello.
Can you talk that fast?
First of all, I agree mostly with everything that's being said. And mm-hmm. I think that the revisionism of the 60s is that...
Be a ZBC. Couple of ZBC, actually. 617-552-4686 ZBC.org with a W there. Four W's, ZBC. It's a different network. course, I can do whatever I want. In this reality. That's a more meaningful sentence than might third time meet the eye, I must say. New metaphysics, Gary Geiserman. Duct taped to the module. Hey, some of us like to do that. So confusing today, however. In a binary universe, A or B. You don't want to get lost in Zeno's paradox, man. Maybe find your way into a Hindu scale of some kind. Now, do you? Don't let that happen to you, man. It's a binary universe, which is generally experienced in and layers, levels, like Photoshop, you know, masks. You gotta work with the pixel, man. It's your friend, even though it's currently wearing a sort of a steel mesh, barbed wire kind of a veneer. Spring jacket, if you will. A fashion statement. A cycle of marketing whose real meaning is through quick-cutting trends, fast edit, surface appreciation to a industry with longevity. Gotta hand it to him. But, you know, I'm open to extreme changes. Sweeping effects, broad strokes, but not what you would think, of course, since I'm not you, to a degree. So you usually experience this binary thing in a fanned out type of milieu with directions and usual landmarks.
That's true, and I'm glad somebody here is finally celebrating the throwing off of the repression of the whole social structure.
The source of most new wealth is stocks.
One of the things that Julie mentioned is that on the day or a couple of days before, probably maybe the day before, it seemed he suddenly seemed to feel better.
And I get handcuffed and taken in a car. This is federal property, Fort Mason, so these are federal cops, so they're taking me to the Presidio there.
It'll change the world, and it's like Lily Light Wilson in my office door. Lily Wilson, the recovering like addict, the worst I've ever seen, so like bad that the entire eighth grade started calling her like Lily Light Wilson. Like.
This is this nightmarish thing which McLuhan and Wyndham Lewis and others foresaw, the creation of the public.
Trying to do, let's say, a love story which is purely character driven, then the only story elements I have to work with are the conflict that exists between two people that has to be overcome. So there's a dynamic as long as that's not at rest. Well, once they capitulate, everything's okay. Now I realize, oh, I'm really in trouble. Now I got to skirt this part very carefully, because the next time I've got real story elements to work with are when something happens.
Not finding a spirituality that's already been packaged neat and tidy, but founding, creating your own.
One of the lowest paying industrial jobs in the United States.
Crystal to do that, yes, but skulls have an acumen. They have a particular mastery, a certain artistry of doing so, that it works more clearly. And therefore, in that same thing, they can show you the futures that you have woven so that you can unweave them. And they can also connect you to futures that are beautiful, that you can strengthen, that you can expand, connect you to the possible, connect you to the unknown that is the possible and the future, and connect you to your future self.
Handcuffs behind my back, and you know, mushrooms to me have always been very pleasant. I even took mushrooms when I was going to be on the Tom Snyder show.
I feel like my back is against a brick wall and I got a Mack truck 2 inches from my face. Every cell in my body is screaming, run. But I can't. I'm kicking and stomping and running and jumping, wreaking all kinds of havoc, creating a bloody mess, and I am going nowhere. Somewhere in my mind, I think I am moving. Somewhere in reality, I am running. Somewhere inside myself, I am oh so still. Quiet. Dead. My soul is not rising. My spirit is not lifting. My life is not living, but I am running. Moving through the universe, a whirling dervish with no end, no purpose, no means, no light left to live. And yet still, I want to go to that place where I can run. Run free, my mind tells me. Those two words cannot occupy the same space in reality.
Blake has no history, has no future, lives in a golden moment created by credit, which binds them ineluctably to a fascist system that is never criticized.
You asked for it. Now!
Father! Father, is he...
Colonel Moss is dead. Thank you, Sergeant. You've saved not only my life, but many others.
I couldn't see any other way, Professor. We gotta live, too.
Father?
Yes, Mary?
Does this mean that we can have peace?
If we want it, Mary, if we really want it, we can have it.
And it was just understood that that's the way it was.
For you and for those who will follow the maps you make.
Just as a kind of mushroom macho. And it was strange because it came on during the interview, and I was talking about how I believe that the CIA has programs of mind control experimentation. And Tom Snyder says, oh, so you're paranoid, huh? I say, well, Tom, you know, conspiracy and paranoia are not synonymous. And he says, oh, yeah, you're paranoid, all conspiracy theories. And I say, well, look, I'll tell you about a real conspiracy theory. And he goes, okay, what? Knitting his brows. And I say, well, remember that horse ruffian who broke her leg in a race and then they shot her? He says, yeah, what about her? I said, well, you know why they shot her? She knew too much.
They cut our power.
Please, get me fixed.
I know what I need, but it doesn't exist. Drink from the dust bowl, haunted Dakotas, think in a fishbowl, haunted alien quotas. Eat hot coals, transcripts, pathos. Oh no, half the moon seems to be missing. Birds fly by, fish inside. They don't stop and smile. Red drops splatter on pale sidewalks. The moon shatters. Big stain. The moon shatters. Surface to air serpents. Grace under water. Eat hot coals. Rake, swallow, throw up clay. Eat white grass. Sweet dreams leave a big stain.
You dream and weave for those who follow the visions and the reality that you create.
Ever since I started this project, I have just been surrounded.
And it's more that that scares people than its particular shape. Because this crystal, those who are scared of skull consciousness would be frightened of this, because this crystal can show you that future, as can these others certainly so. And so how you work with them, with ancient ones you sit, you can sit with skulls as well, but they're much more dynamic, they're much more active, they're much more talkative. And therefore, often in that sense, if you have one upon your desk, you will feel as though it's talking to you. No, you won't hear a voice, but you'll feel as though it's...
Thank you.
that the voice I was hearing, the voice of a woman, was coming from an adjoining room in the lodge in which I was staying. Her companion, a 55-year-old woman, was suffering from the first of five epileptic seizures she would suffer that night. And at 7 in the morning, a helicopter arrived and took this very durable, remarkable woman back to Kathmandu. The trail today, I was thinking about Rob, as I often do. I was thinking about that terrible, awful night he endured as he struggled to save Doug Hansen's life and then his own. Doug Hansen had reached the summit of Everest quite late, around 4 p.m. Rob was waiting for him. And shortly after leaving the summit, about 300 feet from the summit, just above the Hillary Step, he had collapsed. He was out of oxygen and he was out of energy. I can't imagine the sheer violence and chaos as Rob struggled to bring Doug down.
Religion, because it's something that's transpersonal, and it's transforming of the individual, and it's empowering of the individual, and allows them to understand their significance and yet insignificance to the matrix of all creation. They truly develop this new spiritual awareness, if you will, that they don't normally have when they walk into the class, and as well an ecological awareness. And it's not an ecological awareness that's just centered on this planet. It becomes it transposes. It becomes something that's sort of an ecological awareness that attaches itself to the matrix of all creation. And they walk out, hovering about 3 feet off the ground when they come out of these classes. It's amazing. Of all the people that we teach in England, and I mean, there are certainly these archetypes, and the archetypes present their own sets of dynamic problems in each class, and each class learns at a different pace based on the archetypes and where we happen to be training. But in Scandinavia, there seems to be just a tremendous openness to this, and they have, if you're looking for a particular race of people that have a propensity for this, it would certainly be here. And they seem to be learning, despite this morphic resonance concept of the collective unconscious, and everyone learning so much faster now, because it's no longer just a small cell of intelligence community folks that learn how to do this. We have you know, based on what my former colleagues are training and what I'm training, we trained 3,200 people last year. That's, you know, the morphic resonance, the pool of information now that's welling up is just creating this tremendous spin, and people are learning this so much faster than they ever did before.
What's your take on what you'd like to see for the future?
What I'd most like to see is a step backwards.
That's right.
Too much of the software that we're using now is unnecessarily bloated. It's got what I call featureitis. And many of these are features that most of us are never going to use. I would like to see some smaller apps, applications designed with maybe a bunch of plug-in features that you could turn on when you needed them and then turn off when you don't. And I would like to see a smaller, smarter system.
We stopped the last year. And that's supposed to be a wonderful feature of the fairy tale economy until you look at stock ownership. Well, it turns out that about 1% of the population owns close to half the stocks, and the lowest 80% own about 40% of the stocks. 4% of the stocks, which means essentially nothing.
Some tape to rewind. Linear technology, which we're leaving behind. Of course, we don't want to make that metaphor too tight or anything. Physics, Gary Geiserman, WZBC out of Newton, in the Massachusetts part of the United American States. Homeland. (617) 552-4686 and WZBC.org. GaryG4@Mac.com. GaryG4@Mac.com. If you want to touch my soul.
Closets and basements. So you have to stretch your understanding of environment. But basically,
grow it and smoke it. We're very disappointed in the results.
They have been described in some cases as interacting telepathically or otherwise non-spoken in a non-acoustic sense with people who have been abducted and trying to tell them, calm down, it's okay. Showing some compassion.
Yes, they do.
As it were. They are programmed to, I guess at least in a rudimentary sense, show those basic human concerns.
They have a job to do, and it violates our natural sense of personal choice and dignity. And
well, of course.
That's where some of the fear comes from. But they do their job, they get it done, get it over with, and try to comfort their abductees as best they can.
So they make mistakes, too. People are found with their pants on backwards and this and that. Nothing is perfect, folks. Not on this world, not on the other one, or the other.
Newton. Sounds like almost like a real DJ, finally. MIT program funded by the military and people at the station used as guinea pigs. True, it does sound like a strange, troubled young man, of course, but definitely doesn't sound like a computer-generated personality, though. We finally programmed some sort of odd combinations. It's much easier than the programmed ones, because it takes a lot of work to create a virtual reality and then turn it into a strange, bizarre direction for a fairly decent period of time. And arrive at a place like a horseshoe where you don't know where you came from or who you are. It's an amazing adventure, I guess, definitely. But enough's enough already.
Hey, can you hear me? Over.
Okay, well, let's switch to channel 14. Over.
Felt to work in the commercial world. Or not, maybe you could talk a little bit about how some of the bigger companies are working with Linux and where you fit in.
So I haven't been in on it. And again, the reason I haven't been in on it is the same reason that I haven't been interested in marketing and other aspects. I care about the technology, and that's what I do. And what happens is that a lot of companies actually like this. A lot of companies like the lack of politics, like the freedom, like the ability for companies to do their own thing.
There is no terra firma.
And so you'll find companies like IBM, one of the
sleep must be
admittedly one of the biggest companies in computers ever,
from what I never learned.
Had a lot of trouble with their own operating
systems.
Dying
on a Thursday of no apparent cause.
Everybody has at least heard of OS 2, and nobody actually uses it.
Resurrected Friday, and, wrapped up in gauze.
And suddenly,
dreams must be lived.
Big companies like this have the possibility to take something
men's
like Linux
faces on lighters,
and,
no
and
more
modify
cigarettes.
It for their needs without
waking
having
tomorrow,
to go
up
to
slow.
All the trouble they had to go to
pieces
with OS 2 and fighting licensing issues with Microsoft.
Ahead,
and that's a
face,
big relief to some of
the
these companies.
Torso.
What is IBM doing with Linux?
Dream bodies.
Well, IBM or any of these companies have all the same rights that anybody has. They
right.
have the same rights that you have. And perhaps a bit surprisingly, they have the same rights that I have, that I don't have any special rights to Linux really either. They have the right to do whatever they want. They have the right to make their modifications. They have the right to sell them on their computers. And that's actually what they do, that you can buy IBM computers ranging from laptops up to supercomputers running Linux. And that's one of the advantages for IBM when it comes to Linux, is that Linux is actually the first operating system that works across the whole range of hardware that IBM sells. We're talking about not just working on PCs, but they're working on the IBM C series and the
There's
IBM P series, which are completely different beasts.
I love his short stories. Yeah, I'm Matt Clam.
Is there any way you could talk about what the difference is between Linux and Windows that would help us understand what Linux is a little bit more?
To the highest levels, protected informants at the expense of innocent people, informants committed murders with impunity. Local investigations of murderers and drug dealers and arms smuggling were compromised. And when people went to the Justice Department and the FBI with evidence about murderers, some of them wound up dead. It's sad, it's tragic, it's unbelievable, but it happened.
What in the hell? What in the hell?
What in the hell? What in the hell? What in the hell?
This is the ultimate consequence. This is the ultimate consequence of having broken off this symbiotic relationship with the vegetable, feminine, maternal matrix of the planet.
What must be done in this process with respect to informants and protected witnesses and relationships of that office? I think yesterday there was some disturbing testimony as to how at least one assistant U.S. attorney or U.S. attorney felt somewhat intimidated by the culture of the FBI and their attitude towards how they did their work.
After a long, hard journey, trying to accept peace and the music. I like being well and whole and free from self, and prayers for the dead and their living dreams sound so real, and echoes of pain and laughter at the same time lending their passion to our souls. Hoping and praying that we remember when and where we became human in the beginning. The truth of so many movements, so many influences in our minds are strong. We keep believing in love and kindness to our friends, to our enemies. But these values lose time with the dream, for this is for the truth. Take your time with the music, for this is for the truth. Take your time with the revolution, for this is for tomorrow.
Turn to the wind, and your goggles are frozen over, and your face is frozen, and your hands begin to freeze. Wouldn't have wanted to have been in Rob's shoes. He was faced with a terrible dilemma. Should he stay with Doug? Even though I'm sure at a certain point in time he knew there was no hope for Doug. Or should he leave Doug behind and save his own life? In the end, Rob did the right thing, and he stayed with Doug through that night. I have no doubt that Rob could have saved his own life that night, but I just don't think he could bring himself to do it. At his urging and under his leadership, Doug had been allowed to climb far too late in the day, and Rob's final responsibility on that mountain was to look after Doug. And I know in my heart that there was a time or a moment when Rob knew Doug was finished, that he would never get him down that mountain. But Doug was probably still conscious and able to talk to Rob, maybe even pleading to be not left behind. And that would have been impossible for Rob to do, to leave Doug behind while there was still one breath of life left in him. And therein lies one of the sources of the conflicting feelings that one left Everest with in 1996. Is Rob a great hero for having stayed with Doug to the end? Or was he an irresponsible leader who never should have allowed his client to climb so high, so late? For me, Rob will always be a little bit of both.
I'm gonna be ready!
For me, but for him, yeah.
My clients, I want to exercise rights under the Bill of Rights. It is my intention to appeal yesterday's order, and I want to formally ask you to postpone pending that appeal.
How many people must die? You hold your breath.
It's not the easiest thing to do, and it's been hard on my wife Andrea and my daughter sometimes, and it's been hard on me to try to live a shamanically based life, living in the city and living in these times and these ways.
You are in the midst of founding a new spirituality, the great work. Within it, this elusive mystery and magic is essential. Within the great work, expectation needs to be high, yes, but real. And it needs also to be wide, and it needs to be deep. Beyond that, when your expectation has its own height that is real, that is genuine, that is true, when it has its own width and its own depth, you are then able to tap into the expectation of your future self. the you who's already done it, the you who's on the other side of the successes that you want to create, the you who knows the ropes and knows the pitfalls and knows what to avoid, what will work, what won't work, and how to get from where you are to where they are, that future self, ever-changing, ever-expanding, ever-growing, that future self has a kind of expectation after the fact. And you can tap that, you can have that as yours before the fact. But not until your expectation has its own realness, height, width, and depth. Doesn't have to be the highest, doesn't have to be the widest or the deepest, but it has to be real height. However, that is, even if it's just a little height, just a little width, a little depth, if it's real, if it's genuine, then you can access the expectation of your future self. Mind-boggling, mind-boggling if you let yourself think about it, but it's there and it's available, and you can also tap the expectation of your higher self. What level of expectation must they already have? How high, how wide, how deep must their expectation be? And you can have access to it. You see, then, wherever your genuine expectation may falter, wherever your genuine expectation may not be as high as you'd like, as wide or as deep, but at least it is real and it is mine. Not gain from some rah-rah pep talk that somebody gave me. Not gain from some artificial pump-up. But it's mine. And it's real. Whatever it may lack in height, width, or depth, you don't have to be envious of others who have more. Because you've got a future self and you've got a higher self who has more than you could even begin to use at any time in your life. And when yours is real, genuine, when it has height, width, and depth that's yours and real, then you can tap theirs and have full access to those levels of expectation. Long before they're yours, long before you have them in your physical world. You can immerse yourself, yes, you can immerse yourself in a resonance pool of expectation that is whole and sweet and rich, that you can use fully, with full access, even though it's technically, quote, not yours. And therefore far beyond whatever pain, whatever damage, whatever hurt, whatever fear previous expectation has produced, there's so much more reason to explore the mystery, the magic, and to use it, and to use it, and to use it. And beyond that, April of this year, April 1994, the vortex of Sirius, the vortex of the goddess is going to open. 23rd April 1994, on that day, that vortex is open, and through that opening wide and full, will flow and flood information, light, light information and information light, all four, information light, light information and information light, all four will flow. No, not seen with these physical eyes of yours, maybe not even felt with this physical illusion of a body, but there, flooding and filling every bit of your universe, the animal kingdom, the plant, the mineral kingdom, and of course the human kingdom, filling every cell of your body, filling every cell of your brain, every neuron, with all this light, with all this information, information light, and light information. And when that vortex opens, in that one day when it flows and fills and floods every living consciousness, from the minutest electron of energy to the most intricate of the human being that you are, every cell, every neuron will have all the information. Every bit of your DNA will have full access to all the information, or will have access to all the information that you need to create a positive future of dreams, that you need to create a virgin future that has not yet been fully conceived. When this vortex opens, this vortex of Sirius, this vortex of the goddess, when it opens, the energy, the information, the light, will change the meaning of the past. And it will change the course of the future. Commitment can change it. Commitment has the force that can change the meaning of the past, can change the course of the future. The vortex of Sirius, the vortex of the goddess, will change the meaning of the past, will change the course of the future. Commitment has the possibility. The vortex has the ability.
The happiest when I was with Barbara. Never involved in anything I ever did. Never told her anything I did. If I did, I probably would have shocked the pants off her. She knew I had a violent temper, and I did have a violent temper. But I don't think she thought I would go as far as I did go.
There's a widely held belief that mountains kill you, that they're dangerous, and that if you go there, you're probably going to die. Of course, that's not true at all. We know the dangers we will find on those slopes, and we prepare for them. And sometimes we throw the dice, and our numbers don't turn out the way we wanted. But mountains don't kill people. For the most part, incompetence, ambition, greed, and hubris kill people in the mountains. Of course, there can always be that random stone falling 3,000 feet. We accept that events like that, avalanches, rockfall, icefall, are part of the inherent danger of being in mountains. What I don't accept, and what most mountaineers do not accept, is that you die in the mountains because of inexperience or incompetence. What's closer to the truth is the idea that by going into great mountains and encountering great risks sometimes, by using all your skills and all your experience and having those brief, intense moments when sometimes you're closer to death than you ever thought you would be, those moments actually make you appreciate life to a greater degree and maybe to grasp it more firmly.
This is with Jefferson. There were differences of character and background, but there were also big, big differences of politics, and I think we have to deal with them. Adams was cast as the conservative, the closet royalist, Anglophile. He had defended the British troops as a lawyer. He had defended the British troops that fired on a mob in Boston in the famous Boston Massacre. In his presidency, in his response to Shays' Rebellion, in his relations with Thomas Paine and with Jefferson too, he defended property rights. He was a much more conservative personality.
No question.
Let's talk about it.
He would have said that he was much more realistic than Jefferson. Jefferson, he knew, understood, and respected as a visionary. Adams, let's take a very quick look at the differences between Virginia and New England. New England was settled by people who came here as families to establish communities, towns. Virginia was settled by people who were largely the second sons of Virginia families, of English families, who came to Virginia principally to get rich. They came as single men bent on making fortunes, establishing plantations to grow tobacco. Very different purposes. If you were a Virginian and you were a successful Virginian, a politically influential Virginian, you lived on a plantation served by slaves. And your whole economy, your whole way of life, was based on two two realities that were abhorrent to a New Englander like John Adams, debt and slavery. Neither of which was acceptable to John Adams. John Adams is the only founding father who never owned slaves, and he never owned slaves as a matter of principle. Very important to understand. In New England, you were part of a town. You lived in the town. You went to town meeting. You were a selectman, or you served on this board or that. Your neighbors walked by in the street. You saw them at the mill, and you saw them at the general store, and so forth. And you joined in when militia mustered on the green and all that. It was a community. Now, Adams, Jefferson, who is the great voice of democracy, the great voice of the innate wisdom of the common man, lived as far removed from the common man and the hurly-burly and rough and tumble of life as anybody could be or get. Adams, who lived in the town, who saw his neighbors daily, who was of the common people, said, "Watch out for the common man. I know him. I'm one of them. And the common man, if he gets in the majority, can be as dangerous, as despotic, as can an individual who gets too much power." Adams was always worried about one group or another, or one individual or another, getting too much power. Adams did not believe that all men were created equal. He believed that if you look around, you'll see that people are vastly different. Some are taller, stronger, handsomer. Some are more intelligent. Some are born with handicaps. Some are born into wealth. Some are born into poverty. They're not equal. It only is common sense. Look at them. But, he said, we are all equal in the eyes of God and must be equal before the law. Very clear.
And I'm taking a dump, and the last piece of shit falls in, and the toilet water squirts up my ass. Then my asshole shuts like a time lock at the bank. And that kind of laugh tells me you know what I'm talking about. And I'm trying to push it out, and it won't come out. And now I got like a 4-hour flight, and I'm thinking, God knows what's laying eggs in me.
There's a lot of differences. One maybe the most noticeable one to the user is that Windows is more than just an operating system. Windows is a way of life to some degree, and more specifically, it's Microsoft's way of life. And
disk space and RAM OS 8, OS 10 will use, but I can bet it's a lot. If we can turn on the features that we need when we need them, our Macs would run better and wouldn't crash for lack of memory.
Very true. Well, thank you, Carla, for your contribution to the show. Carla, where is the best place for folks to go look for your book, Sam's Teach Yourself Photoshop 6 in 24 Hours?
Whoever's involved with this.
Right.
How many people are involved in the abduction phenomenon right now? We've tried to run numbers on this, Ernest, over the years.
ZBC. Coming to you live from the mezzanine at a large retail shopping outlet near you.
Tropical strain.
WZBC.org if you're airborne. 617-552-4686 if you know how to use one. Not everybody does. It's technology advanced way beyond its time by the phone company. I want to give a big shout out to all the phone companies out there. They got broadband by the nuts in this Tri-River sleepy town. The northeastern part of the landmass. Very excellent part. Recorded voices there.
Will it be put back on this planet after it's cleansed?
I wouldn't call it genetically correct. I would call it genetically improved. There will be an interbreeding with what the new generation of Adam and Eve children. There will be a new Adam and Eve, and that they will interbreed with that. They will then come down here and then uplift the resonance of this world who survived to the nuclear holocaust and world changes.
Where are they going?
Where is who going?
Where will the survivors be taken?
They're going to the other world, and again, I don't know where it is. I wish I did.
And what happens to this one after it's been nuked?
There will be survivors, and they will, the human race will continue. It will not be totally destroyed. The planet will not be totally destroyed.
It's going to be a pretty ugly place to live in, though.
It's going to be tough for a few years, but things will settle down quite rapidly.
Is the planet itself considered to be, in your estimation and others perhaps, a living organism?
All created things are alive if you want to look at it in that sense. I would not call it a living organism.
Not with a consciousness, but it is
biologically
living, of course. We know that. Is the planet beginning to react now to the degradation and rape that's been going on for some time? With
overall, yes.
Yeah. Cleansing itself, as it were, trying to?
Well, I see it as under administration and not just a blind thing, not just a blind reaction.
When you say under administration, how would you further define that for us?
When, I'm going to get religious here.
Well, I don't know about that, Ernest. Go right ahead. It's your book, and whatever religion is such a subjective issue anyhow. Go ahead.
I'm not associated with any religion.
I understand that.
You can understand. This all had to originate somewhere.
Oh, yes.
Okay,
this is not a dice roll.
This is not a dice roll. That was a creator. When he created, he also laid out a plan for administration. And
logical.
Right. All this goes back to him. So that he set up an administration for this planet. That was our planetary prince who defaulted. And Adam and Eve were part of that administration. They blew it. And now he has a substitute or alternate plan to retrieve the world, rehabilitate it.
Rehabilitate this world, this planet, or start with this species somewhere else?
No. He's going to rehabilitate this world.
Why not interject some kind of ultimatum, some kind of overt threat that humankind either changes or it's lunch?
Well,
and go ahead.
We've been given these warnings for a couple thousand years. We don't listen to them.
All right. Give me an example of a warning.
Well, prophecy in the Bible, it tells us about this disaster a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus told us about this disaster. We don't believe it. We don't accept it. So we pay the price.
How soon?
How soon will it take place?
Yeah.
I say shortly, but I'm not going to predict any years.
Shortly is 5, 10, 15 years.
Well, I think it's less than 10 years.
Done several programs on it, but it's a tremendous.
Things that plants do for people is intoxicate them. Every culture on Earth, with one exception, has had a psychoactive plant that they use to change consciousness. The one exception are the Eskimos, and the only reason they didn't was because nothing would grow where they lived.
This is one of many creative new ideas and venues that we could explore.
Like the Father, the Spirit, and the Chosen One. Like the infrared light of the sun. I cast shadows on the unholy one.
Get the one in. We don't hear the Magalang talking. We don't get the one in. Don't with the Magalang talking. Yes.
at the federal level, the state and provincial level, the municipal level, for government to play a role as an activist, to enjoin, to bring together management, labor, and say, what can we do to provide the incentive so you can be competitive? Management can profit, labor can have security, we can have shorter work weeks and better benefits.
Justice Department. I know his home number. I can dial direct and I can avoid the San Francisco.
What are you going to tell him?
Oh, my God. They grow out of those pods. They cut our power.
I try to do it. I try to get up every morning and greet the sun and thank the sun for shining and give back to it the way I've been taught by my elders and Grandmother Moon, the feminine when it comes up, and to light the fire in the morning and stay with that light during the day. And when things come up where I lose it or drop it or forget about it, which it does because I'm just a man, I'm not anything other than that, to try to own that. And when I step on somebody's toes, to be present for them when they come and invite them to come tell me about that, because that's a learning, that's a teaching for me, and that's how the good relationship is maintained. So that's one part of response to your living your practice, living it daily.
The most dangerous industrial job in the United States, and the pay is terrible, and the working conditions are terrible. And
talking. Did you say that?
As though it's talking to you. When you do, rest your hand upon it and listen. Listen with this ear. Don't try to hear with that one. Listen with this ear. So you can't have it there. It'll talk to you. It'll tell, look at this, think of this, wait a minute, do that, someone's going to call. It'll talk those kinds of things, very, quote, mundane. But it will also talk very esoteric things. This is something you need to pay attention to. There's a lesson here. There's a whisper. It'll talk to you. It'll interact with you. It can guide you to the future, as we say. It can guide you to show you the past, certainly so. It can help you to weed out certain futures that you, in your less than admirable states, put into place, that you seeded and planted. It can do all kinds of work of this nature. It also can link you to your future self, the one who has already achieved and accomplished. And something else it can do, every skull can do, regardless of its nature, is it can drain negative energy. It can pull out negative energy. It has no investment in it. Therefore, you're running anxiety, much as we talked in another time of a small crystal that I can place a hand upon its brow and it'll take it. Use the same one for several purposes, but it will take it. And to work with it in such capacity. Now, there are other stories, such as the Mistral Hedge's skull is somehow, we're not going to get into that, we're not going to discuss that. There's a story that there are 13 skulls out there, all linked together, of which Mistral Hedge's is one. We're not going to talk about the validity or the correctness or the lack of correctness and such. What we will say is this, that metaphorically there are 14 races, coming out of Sirius, 14 directions coming out of Atlantis. Osiris, in that sense, in the Egyptian mythology, was killed, and to make sure he was dead, he was cut into 14 pieces and scattered about the universe. 14, 14, 14, and there are 14 skulls that are esoterically linked, that are metaphorically linked, that are linked on levels that are quite other than physical, that create a network of such energy that spans time and spans space. One for each of the races of Sirius who brought skull consciousness, not skull shapes, skull consciousness to Earth. Similarly representing one of the each of the 14 directions that the Atlanteans left, tried to escape in the three destructions of Atlantis. That is symbolized in the mythology, in the stories of Isis and Osiris, and how Osiris cut into 14 pieces.
So if you're going to look at the relationship of plants and people, you really have to look at an intoxicant. And it could have been the grape, and it could have been the opium poppy, but I just thought the story of the marijuana plant was such a fascinating one, and I had some direct experience of it, so it seemed like a good one to delve into.
Now, as you point out in your book, homegrown marijuana, marijuana that was grown in the United States, in the 1960s and 70s was very weak. So a lot of people who tried to grow it and smoke it were very disappointed in the results. Why was it a not very effective intoxicant in the 60s and 70s when it was grown in the U.S.?
Well, it was basically, it was a tropical plant, and it grew very powerfully in the tropics, in places like Hawaii and in India, where it's grown very commonly. But when people took the seeds from the marijuana that they bought, which was mostly marijuana that had been grown in Mexico, very carelessly, in fact, these plants wouldn't do very well here. And one of the great ironies of the drug war is this plant that really did not have much of a purchase. I mean, looking at it from a natural history point of view, on the American continent, this wasn't really its habitat, except for a few corners in Northern California and Hawaii. So it took the drug war, really, to create an environment in which this plant could thrive here.
What did the drug war do to create an environment that helped the plant thrive here?
It's a funny environment, really, because it consists of closets and basements. So you have to stretch your understanding of environment. But basically what happened, it's almost like the Newtonian principle of, you act here and you have an equal and opposite reaction. So basically with the drug war, you had people spraying paraquat, an herbicide, on the Mexican marijuana, and then Ronald Reagan sends the helicopters into the hills of Humboldt County to rout out the people growing there.
Humboldt County, California.
Yes, excuse me, which is sort of the original hotbed of domestic marijuana, and one of the few. And they forced the growers indoors. And once they forced the growers indoors, the plant had, as it turned out, this wonderful opportunity. If it could do two things, if it could provide a sort of a feeling, a magic, so powerful that people were willing to risk their lives and their property for it, and if it could adapt to this strange new environment, growing indoors under these 1,000-watt lights 24 hours a day and all these high-tech fertilizers and CO2 tanks sweetening the air for them. If it could adapt to that bizarre atmosphere, environment, it would thrive. And what's happened essentially is marijuana has now a whole continent of new habitat.
Time with his family was sacred, and any interference would throw him into a rage. It made him even more angry if it happened during the holidays.
This fella, he owed me about $1,600. So here we come Christmas Eve. And I go there, and he says, "Nah, come with me. We'll go out. We'll have a good time. We'll party. We'll meet some broads with this, that, and the other thing." And I said, "No, I would really like the money. I gotta buy something." And, you know, he gave me a story, a bull story. So I left there. I was a little bit upset. Got on the bus, went home. I was putting the toys together for the kids, and this thing was really bugging me. It was annoying me. It was just making my whole disposition bad. Thought just occurred to me, this is bullshit.
It was Christmas Eve. After midnight, his family was sleeping. Kuklinski got in his car and drove to New York City.
I went to the bar. They told me he just left and he was parked a couple blocks down in the parking lot. I believe the parking lot was closed, but he was parked in there. I saw his car. His car was running, but it had snow on it. So I knocked on the door and he said, "Hey, how are you? Glad to see you. Come on, sit down." So I go walk around the pasture side, sit down, talking to him. I said, "Look, I really need the money." I says, "You know, it's not right. You've just been playing me like a fool here. I had this pistol in my hand and he just was annoying me to no end with his babbling. And he was just going on and on. And I fired. And I couldn't see a damn thing because there was snow on the windows. And when that flash went off, I just had spots before my eyes. My ears were ringing because the noise inside the car when the gun went off. Couldn't hear, couldn't see. Then I panicked, because now I don't know what's going on. Anyway, I had caught the guy in the temple, and as he moved back, the second shot caught him in under the chin. Only about the time I could see, I reached in the man's pocket, and he had a roll of money. I took my $1,600 off him, put the rest of the money of it that was his in his pocket, got out of the car, and walked away. And that's happened one Christmas Eve in New York City.
This is what ended partnership. This is what ended balance between the sexes. This is what set us on the long slide.
They don't have control over those. Poverty still remains higher than it was 20 years ago. The worst record in the industrial world by far is the United States and Britain.
The population is richer than 1%. This is just not sustainable, and it looks like it's getting worse. So I don't really think that the issue is whether we've had socialism or whether we're going to have anarchist socialism. The pendulum will swing back, and wealth will be redistributed as it has been in the past by collectivist government policies. It may not happen this election, it may not happen next election, but it's just not sustainable to have such a disparity in our country.
Right.
WZBC out of Newton, still in business, and the business is good. I don't know what it is, but it could be good. So there you have it. Financial report from the bowels of the Catholic Church. This is a big bastion of stuff. Catholic Church, man. Big finance. Lots of money there.
Then what we, the path that we have chosen today, and my offering to Bovall and Hancock and West, was that we may even accelerate the process of understanding what's in these chambers if we understand this technology, and that it's a technology we're just now beginning to suspect. Our own science is documenting this inner technology. Documenting this inner technology today, and it goes back 35,000 years. We look at the implications in our own history. I believe that we're pretty liberal here in the West in some respects, and we look at what happened with John West and Robert Schock trying to date the Sphinx at only 8,000 years old, and we're talking about now dating that pre-Ice Age. The implications, I believe this is the generation where all this changes. This is the generation where we are living the past paradigm, and we're developing a new one, and that's happening in the presence of one another in this generation.
My back is against a brick wall. I got a mat truck 2 inches from my face. Run free, baby. Run now. It looks hard, but it would be so easy. Just turn around and go. Flip all the wires, hookers, and hang-ups, and then you're home free. You can give birth to an excuse so easily you believe it's always been there. Part of the natural order made to order by your forever clever mind, constantly protecting you against things you no longer need to be protected from. And I believe like a holy roller, singing, sweating, preaching, go tell it on the mountain, while speaking in 20 different tongues and diving in 10,000 feet of baptismal water without a life preserver. I believe like my bullet-ridden brother out there somewhere right now, gurgling blood through his last breath, spitting out a red right prayer, so new, so sweet, so baby fresh, so full of truth, he thinks it can save his life. God does not exist in desperation, and hope is lying dead somewhere in the sewer, down the street, around the corner, in the alley, underneath the feet of somebody, itching, scratching, trembling, Joseph for that next seat and sucking somebody's dick. I got 2 minutes, yo. I got 2 motherfucking minutes before I run free or die, yo. 2 minutes before I smash my face into the grill of a Mack truck. Before I get 10,000 bricks shoved up my ass, before I run free or die.
Thank you. lot of people do this, you know, this is what I call, it's actually devoicing. When I do this, I'm using half my vocal folds. I'm not using my whole voice.
We're going to make it, Kitty. Now it gets interesting again.
Why?
I'm always afraid when I'm working that I don't have enough story. This is something I always complain about to myself, to the writers I'm working with. Who's going to pay attention to these people if we don't have some sort of a story to lean on?
Metaphysics. It's the best of tonight. Best of New Metaphysics all melded together. But with a twist, of course. Somewhere in that invisible area, just past the three-quarter pole or so, the meditation consciousness that can be part of waking consciousness kind of profile. WZBC.org, 617-552-4686. GaryG4@Mac.com. Some numbers there. 90.3. Out of Newton. So that's the story so far.
Government was guilty. The government still is guilty.
I'll leave the damn government alone already. Always slapping mom around in the kitchen when the kids are in the other room, kind of thing. I mean, you can keep doing that, but you gotta let yourself be slapped around too, of course. Spread the wealth. So that's the storyline up to here. Segue into the end of The Matrix, Part 1. Get ready for Matrix Part 2. And 3, of course. As much media as you can get out of an apartment in Boston, for Christ's sakes. So there we have it. It's just real time now. We've caught up. We could do a micro insertion. Step at a time for a month. As much in real time as we want to. Not very long, however. We're working with this particular frequency this time. No geriatrics or pyrotechnics or histrionics. Just sort of tame down the really weird stuff and you know, the overt things like levitation, and as you can do it privately, of course, like I do. If finally learned how to do that a few months ago.
Hate breeds hate.
This I've been practicing for a long time. So we'll get there. Be smoking tobacco again soon. Don't worry. We'll get there, my friends. Yes, it'll be natural tobacco with no chemicals.
Hate, but you can overcome hate
like the hundred plus in each brand of American so-called cigarette. And of course, it's primarily the chemical additives, along with general addiction to tobacco, which can get you. In the world of addiction that we live in, of course. But not everybody has an addiction problem. It's just one of a bag of tricks. Of course, it's an extremely feared and misunderstood syndrome. Extremely misunderstood, if at all. As we know, right? Yeah, those clinicians, well, they may think they know something about it. Rehabilitation, yeah, that's it. At any rate, some good stuff there. So, if you'll just get in the car, and I will bring you home.
God created the heaven and the earth. And the earth was without form and void.
No, don't listen to him. He's a recorded voice. He's not a living being in the moment like this voice is.
And there was light. And God saw the light. That it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness. The darkness.
In the instances where the films have been successful, and they aren't always, but when they are successful, it's because in some way character can substitute for story. To the nerve that got punched in the way we were was that these two characters were such obvious kind of mythical prototypes of, in America.
And conquerors, whether they be governments or individuals and dictators and despots or tyrants, history has always shown that the human spirit will always prevail.
Thank you.
Very tiring. I call it, it's a bit naughty of me, but I call it the caring voice. I was doing a lecture recently in London to the Freud Society, and I was doing these voices, and I looked at all of them when I was doing it and suddenly realized that I'd done the therapist voice, you know. This is this voice, which is, I'm really listening, I'm really... But in fact, it's actually, if you just do that for a bit, anybody, you can feel that the voice begins to tighten. So those sorts of habits are maybe fashions. So I unlock that habit and then get the voice completely without... You shouldn't feel the voice. The first thing you should feel is that the voice leaves you. The word has left you. So I would use maybe very gentle ooh sound. The human voice works like an arc. It's up and out. So I would get somebody to look at a point just above eye line and very gently send a sound there like ooh, and eventually they begin to feel that there's no pressure in the throat at all. The voice just leaves. If they feel this pressure, there's the oldest trick in the book, which is to think of a yawn. And as you think of a yawn, the throat opens and the voice escapes. Now I know you can't speak yawning, but it's a way of beginning to feel the freedom. And as soon as the voice gets free, not only do you have more options and the voice will move more organically, but people listen to you. I mean, your voice is very free. That's why people listen to you. But you know, you hear a lot of people with tension in their voice, even very small bits of tension, almost put a barrier between the speaker and the listener.
Can you do that yawn thing that you're talking about?
Well,
side A. Please turn the tape over for side B.
Examine the options available.
Cars and mine their gold. We're only here to buy some drugs, do some time, and sell their.
guns were only here to fight the wars, build new homes, and sleep outdoors. Meet on flags, volunteer doctors, government orders, and everyone dies like flies without borders. Meet with flags, it's not our world anymore. We're just the people in it. It's not our game to play. 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 Load trucks, $10. Stay stuck. Join the core. That's what we're for. Shop, store, open door. Buy more. Stay in debt. That's what we're for. That's what we're for. That's what we're for. Flags of meat. Doctors volunteer, government orders, and everyone dies like flies without borders. It's not our world anymore.
Songus on the Foreign Relations Committee.
And put in place archaic options which will restore this balance. And to the good credit of people like Dick Schultes and Gordon Wasson and Albert Hoffman, we have, in this century, taken into our hands the tools, the information, and the means to do this.
Volume 2, for sure.
But sit back and see where we turn up. So what do we do in the meantime?
I've got a pocket spavel set.
Go play with a nut.
Well, if that's your attitude.
Hey, look, Earthman, you've got a job to do, remember? The question to the ultimate answer, right?
Now, there's a lot of money tied up in that head thing of yours. I mean, just think of the merchandising. Ultimate question, t-shirts, ultimate question,
well, yes,
biscuits.
But where do we start? Know? I don't know. The ultimate answer, so-called, is 42. What's the question? How? How am I supposed to know? Could be anything. I mean, what's 6 times 7?
42.
Yes, I know that. I'm just saying the question could be anything. How should I know?
Because you and Trillion are the last generation products of the Earth computer matrix. You must know.
I know.
Shut up, Marvin. This is organism talk.
It's printed in the Earthman's brainwave patterns, but I don't suppose you'll be very interested in knowing that.
You mean you can see into my mind?
Yes.
And?
It amazes me how you manage to live in anything that small.
Ah, abuse.
Yes.
Oh, he's only making it up.
Making it up? Why should I want to make anything up? Life's bad enough as it is without wanting to invent any more of it.
Marvin, if you knew what it was all along, why didn't you tell us?
You didn't ask.
Well, we're asking you now, Metal Man. What's the question?
The ultimate question of life, the universe, and everything.
Yes.
To which the answer is 42.
Yes, come on.
I can tell that you're not really interested.
Will you just tell us, you motorized maniac?
Oh, look, the control panel's lighting up. We must have arrived.
Hey, yeah, we've zapped back into real space.
Next generation, it'll be a little easier because the new ideas now have been offered. This is the generation. I think history will look back at this generation, Art, they're going to say this is where the choices were made.
But Doug, you said you don't.
A lot of aspects of the way we're governed and the way the economy runs it are collectivist, progressive income tax, and the pendulum will swing back. It's just not sustainable.
All right, thanks for your call, Doug.
These young people, and I mean now not only those of the
of the Black Bloc or primitivist persuasion or whatever, but anarchists in general and people of different colors who are being attracted to anarchism, is that they face a very different world than young people did 35 years ago. You know, when I was a young activist in the 60s. And one sign, which I was to see several times, provided me a big clue. And it was a sign that carried by people, hand-painted, "Stop the criminalization of youth." Now, in the last 10 or 20 years, this has happened. There has been a criminalization of youth in the form of, for example, a big case would be laws like California's Prop 20, which I can't remember all the provisions of it, but basically it's one of those laws that has young offenders punished along with and as adults. It's drug war harassment of high school kids, having to be drug tested to participate in extracurricular activities, to do anything, being suspended if you're carrying a Tylenol in your backpack and so on.
I want them to look is right at my website. I have a link to Amazon.
Okay.
And I make an extra 50 cents a book or something like that if they buy through my website.
Of the Atlanteans, only 13 new locations are known. Of Osiris, only 13 pieces were found. Of the 14 races in that particular regard, well, 13 of them have a particular energy that the 40th does not. And of what is called 13 skulls, really 14 skulls in that particular regard, one is, quote, missing. No, we're not suggesting this is the one in that particular regard, not at all. What we are suggesting is that there is a lattice work, there is a matrix of skull energy, that is not just of your Earth, but is of your universe, that spreads its far reaches, that is galactic, and beyond galactic is universal. And what we are suggesting is that each skull that is legitimately a skull consciousness, regardless of its form, and indeed if it's not a skull consciousness, even if it is carved into that shape of a skull, each such, in that particular regard, that holds the consciousness of skull has access to and linkage to that mythical, that metaphorical, that allegorical, that esoteric band of 14 races, skulls, directions, pieces of consciousness. And that's all we're going to say about it. And as we draw to a close in that particular regard, and there's so much more that we could say about each of these, we want to create very quickly a grid. A magical grid that as you looking there at this can awaken you to the skull energy, to the energy of ancient ones.
Bankruptcy since the Depression.
psychology, there had better not be a Nuremberg, because not enough people have stood up for this. People have contented themselves with rattlemorphism for 25 years when they knew in their hearts that it was wrong. Philip.
Provide some check and balance and oversight of management.
You better like to live the way they tell you to live, or else.
To the drug war, what was this, you know, rather mild plant with a THC as the active ingredient of about 3% is up to 15, even 17%. So this marijuana, you know, that you can't even go near without really falling on your face at this point, has evolved, essentially. And we don't normally look at things like the drug war from the point of view of natural history, but from the plant's point of view, which is really what I'm trying to get at in this book, the drug war has been, it's almost like an acid soil for a conifer. You know, certain kind of plants love an acid soil. Well, the drug war is the acid soil in which marijuana has thrived.
Provide the right fundamental answer and framework for our national healing process.
And he starts laughing. And to me, on the mushroom, it looked like Tom Snyder doing Dan Aykroyd doing him. And his laughter is like musical notes on a scale. So I'm in the back of the police car remembering this with my handcuffs on. And they bring me to the Presidio. They take the handcuffs off so they can take my fingerprints. And now the guy's trying to be nice. And he's saying, so you're a comedian, huh? While he's rolling my fingers. Because these guys are young twerps who have never had a drug bust before. You know, they're just traffic things there. So I sat in the cell there, and I was getting angry. I wasn't scared, because I hadn't harmed anyone. You know, I mean, what am I doing here? You just felt the insanity of it. And as it turned out, I was ready to have a trial. So they decided that it was just enough for personal use. And so therefore, I got a $200 citation and nothing on my permanent record. But it was very strange, because I realized what I was angry about and what I was sad about was the implications of this guy saying, so you like mushrooms, huh? It was like him saying, so you like the evolution of consciousness, huh? Because when the Berlin Wall crumbled in 1989 and communism fell, they had to replace it with the war on drugs. They had to have that hysteria go somewhere. So, you know, what do we have? It's a war on drugs, and we have a general, General McCaffrey, as the drug czar. The first drug czar was William Bennett, who then became the education czar, and now he's the virtue czar. So it was a war on drugs, and as long as the government can decide arbitrarily which drugs are legal and which are illegal, then anybody behind bars for any kind of drugs is a political prisoner. Over 10 million people have been arrested for smoking marijuana. Over 10 million. And now, of course, they're getting hysterical again because Proposition 215 was passed. And so General McCaffrey says, oh, now there's going to be more crime because people can smoke pot to ease their nausea. But of course, we have a secret weapon, which is the neutron bong. The neutron bong wipes out the user but leaves the stash intact. So now they've even brought it to the home where parents can buy in the drugstore a home drug test kit where they have their kids pee in a cup, you know, build up trust. And then they send it to some place and get a number. So I decided I wanted to try it. See, what happens is, it's like a chess game. The technology comes where you can test for drugs at home, so then the technology is also there where you can now get powdered urine by mail that's drug-free. You just pour it into a glass, add warm water, and stir, and you have drug-free urine for your next test. So when Ed Pearl told me that I would have to take a drug test to perform here, I got some of this yellow powder in the mail. And then I got stoned to really test it. I got so stoned, though, that I poured the yellow powder into a glass, and then I peed in it. And then I decided to drink it. Because I wanted to raise my spiritual consciousness to a higher plateau. So I'll tell you what I learned from it, and you don't have to do it. Drinking your own urine does not raise your spiritual quest to a higher plateau. It's the decision to drink your own urine that does the trick.
The next quarter. And they begin to slide towards the line and over the line. Not necessarily with a vino sense at the beginning, but with a sense of light at the end of the tunnel, up. Linkage to the outside auditor.
I understand you channel, yes, channel, into us. The more we can then recycle through our own means and give to you. So it is definitely a two-way street that you and I operate under, such as you and such as I. And so universal truth will always change. Were you in a land with seasons, the universal
build himself
truth
up into this arbiter of wasp tastes
should be comfortable at all times would be the universal one. And yet the specific application of that truth would change according to your seasons. In summer, it would be time for the bathing suit, in winter for the parka, and so on and so forth, according to the wind and your temperatures outside and within, too. And that is really the problem. Universal truth must always be refitted and requilted and the hemline of truth goes up and down. Not because truth is malleable, but because it must be fitted to your individual experience and individual needs. That is the problem with universal truth, that again, as our friend has mentioned, too often the one-size-fits-all becomes, you might say, a tent or a sack dress. It does not truly illumine, much less reveal, much less protect the individual to whom it is given. And so if the truth becomes too universal, in quotes, it is often left beside until some individual of a rebellious nature can so distort it as to make it fit, much as our friend here has sleeves which are a bit too baggy, too comfortable. These are universal shirts, you might say, but custom-fitted truth always seems like a distortion. I trust I have made my paradox totally clear.
That's a high ambition.
What will it do for me?
Where
will it take me? And how will it do what Microsoft Windows does better? Is the main virtue that it's free?
The main virtue, from my point of view, is that it's free.
I open my computer onto GNOME, and what do I see?
I don't know exactly. I've only seen a few demos of GNOME. It's being developed mainly by people in Atlanta and some people in Mexico and a few others around the world. And I don't work on it personally. You know, there are thousands of people developing free software now. One interesting thing about free software is that instead of being little groups that are all at odds with each other, in effect, everybody's at least potentially cooperating with everybody else.
So Windows is a very in-your-face operating system, and in my opinion, has failures as an operating system exactly because of that.
Once you decide to drink your own piss, you're halfway there. It's one of the earliest taboos. Don't drink your waste matter. So you taste it, a little salty perhaps, but that's it. And once you transcend one taboo, it has a ricochet effect, and you can start looking more objectively at other taboos.
$2.69 for every dollar had been coming in the late 90s, early 2000s, from non-auditing practices.
You describe this wave of innovative breeding in the 1980s. you know, performed by people working secretively, growing marijuana indoors. Do you think these people were consciously breeding for certain characteristics in the marijuana? Do you think that they really knew what they were doing in a technical way? Or was it just a kind of hit and miss thing that chanced upon a way of growing a hardy marijuana plant indoors?
Well, probably both. I mean, there was a lot of, we'll try anything and see what works, which is, you know, the way evolution works, trial and error. But also, there was an understanding. Whenever you're breeding, you have an end in sight, you have a goal, you have your utopian version of the plant you're working with. And they understood that if marijuana was going to grow in this new environment, it had to get a lot smaller, because you can't grow 16 feet tall plants in an 8-foot high basement or in a little closet. And it had to grow faster, because you didn't really want to stay put if you're growing marijuana, since the police were likely to knock down your door. So they crossed two great strains of the plant. And there was one, a northern strain from Afghanistan, and then there was this tropical strain. Sativa is the tropical strain, indica is the northern strain. And so they very knowingly put them together, because they understood that cannabis indica was a much smaller, stouter, very potent plant since it grew in a northern latitude, had to flower and get to seed more quickly than sativa, which took its sweet time about it, since it grew near the equator. And they brought these two things together. They also learned along the way, though, that the high associated with each of these strains was very, very different. And the way people talk about it is sativa is a very kind of head high as opposed to a body high. And some people call indica's blue collar pot. I mean, they're for just, you know, if you want to, at the end of the day, you want to just kick back and not think. And sativas allow you to function a lot better. And so they started modulating these effects, and they did create marijuana for different highs, but also to deal with different maladies, because, you know, marijuana, like a lot of plants, is a medicine also. And for certain kinds of, for appetite, one would be better than the other. For pain relief, indicas are supposedly the best. So a lot of this was very deliberate, you know, and I've met a lot of these breeders and growers, and I spent time in Amsterdam and in California meeting with them. And what really hit me was that the best gardeners of my generation, this is what they're doing. They're underground perfecting this plant.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's been an honor, a privilege. Fat check from the naval intelligence people. And, you know, periodically tests are done on the audience to see if those 8 people can perform various functions while being measured by several people in white coats and clipboards. WZBC out of Newton. New Metaphysics, Gary Geiserman. I'll see you next week. And I'll be here myself. Of course, with tape and all, anything's possible. You may be prompted to put a quarter in your device shortly. The decision rests with you. I'm not putting one in on my end, so I'll be around for about another hour or so. .3 FM, WZBC.org. GaryG4@map.com. And I'd give you the Swiss bank account number, but not you, but maybe another listener might act in a greedy fashion. So.
Writing this chapter about marijuana in your new book, The Botany of Desire, you've thought not only about how humans changed the form of marijuana that is grown in the United States, you thought about how marijuana changes our perceptions. And one of the theories you propose is that marijuana may actually remove some of the filters that consciousness normally puts between us and the rest of the world.
Ever since I've started this project, I have just been surrounded.